Otis. She arched an eyebrow at me.
So I was telling you all that. What if one of your customers hears us talking about covens and such things?
We're in the perfect place to talk of them. They'll assume you're Wiccan. And if you're going to go way back in history and anyone is rude enough to interrupt and ask you about it, like that guy who just left, we'll say we're part of the SCA. Her brow crinkled in confusion.
This Society for Cruelty to Animals?
No, I think you mean the SPCA, where the P stands for prevention.
Ah, of course.
I shot a quick thought to Oberon. See? Witches. I see what you mean now. She'd probably give me a sausage, and it would have broccoli in it. Trying not to laugh at Oberon's one-track mind, I said, Yes, well, the SCA is the Society for Creative Anachronism. People get together and dress in medieval garb and actually have battles and armor and everything. Lots of these modern folk romanticize the old days and enjoy role-playing. It's the perfect cover for talking about magic in front of average people. She scrutinized me closely for a moment, trying to decide whether I was lying or not. Apparently satisfied, she took a breath and said,
Very well. The short version of the long story is that she came with me to America. We were living in the city of Srebrenica in Poland when the Blitzkrieg arrived in September 1939. I saved her from being raped, and she sort of became my responsibility after that. I couldn't just leave her. Our parents were dead.
Ah. Your parents as well?
Yes, but the Nazis had nothing to do with that.
She smiled grimly.
I was already 72 in 1939.
You hear that? The nice blonde in her 30s is actually more than 140 years old.
She must use that oil of Olay stuff. I wonder if it will get rid of the wrinkles on a Sharpay.
Impressive. And Emily was how old?
She was only 16.
She still acts like she's 16. Is everyone in your coven from Srebrenica?
No, only Emily and me. We all came to America together, however, once we found one another in Poland.
And you came straight to Tempe?
No, we have lived in several cities, but we have stayed here the longest.
Why, may I ask?
No doubt for the same reason you have stayed here. Few old gods, few old ghosts, and until recently no fae at all. Now I have answered 5 questions truthfully. Will you answer 5 of mine in the same fashion?
Truthfully, yes. Not necessarily completely. She accepted my qualification without comment.
How old are you?
She asked. That's one of the most probing questions you can ask someone who isn't a standard human anymore. It was one way to gauge power and intelligence. And if she didn't already know my age, then I would rather keep it that way. I prefer to be underestimated. Fights go better for me when my enemies do not know what they're truly dealing with. There's an opposing school of thought that says if you display your power, you avoid getting into fights in the first place. But that is true only in the short term. Enemies may not confront you openly, or as often if they know you're powerful, but they will still plot against you and be more likely to try something sneaky. Now, Melina had been very forthcoming with me about her age. But I didn't feel comfortable responding with the same level of candor, because telling her would be telling the whole coven. So I settled for a dodge. At least as old as Radomiwa. That set her back a bit. She was wondering if she should ask how I knew Radomiwa's age, or let it slide. I didn't know Radomiwa's age, but I knew damn well I was older than she was. Melina was smart, though, and decided to ask other things instead of following up on a line of query that wouldn't get her anything more specific.
Angus Og told Emily you have a sword that belongs to him. Is this true?
I chose to answer only part of the question, sloppy of her. No, it does not belong to him. She hissed in frustration, seeing her mistake.
Do you still have this sword he believes is his?
Yes, I do. It occurred to me that it was odd of her to be asking me about it, because Radomiwa had been the one to slap a magical cloak on it. Did Melina not talk to her coven leader?
Is it here on the premises?
Oh, now that was a good one. Much better than asking where it was, which would allow me to be vague. This was a yes or no, and unfortunately, since the answer was yes, and I had promised to answer truthfully, well, I could lie. Except that I thought she would know it, and it would be the same as saying yes while giving her just cause to swerve off the high road. Yes, I admitted. She beamed at me.
Thank you for not lying. Last question. Which member of the Tuatha De Danann have you most recently seen in corporeal form?
Whoa. Why did she want to know that? The Morrigan, I replied. Her eyes widened.
The Morrigan?
She squeaked. Oh, now I got it. She had expected me to say Bress, and then she could surmise that I had killed him with the sword that I still had on the premises. But now she couldn't surmise that at all. She could surmise instead that since I'd seen the Morrigan and lived, I had a death goddess in my five, or my circle, or whatever. And maybe the reason Bress didn't come home last night was because of the Morrigan and not because of me. But this line of reasoning implied that she knew about Bress coming to see me yesterday. How many people in your coven are helping Angus Og to take the sword from me? A veil fell across her features.
I am sorry, but I cannot answer that.
Bingo, as they say in church halls on Wednesday nights. That's a shame, and we were being so candid with each other.
We can still be candid about other subjects.
I doubt that. It sounds to me like you're allied with Angus Og.
Please.
The witch rolled her eyes.
As I said on the phone yesterday, if that were true, then why would we want to humiliate him?
You tell me, Melina Sokolovsky.
Fine. We do not want anything to do with Tuatha De Danann. Mortals who have dealings with them rarely end happily, and while we are not your average mortals, we still are not in their weight class, if you will allow me to use a boxing metaphor.
I will allow it this once. I would find it more amusing if you would use gamer jargon from now on, like, if we fought the Tuatha De Danann, we'd get so pwned. She smiled at me, understanding that I had made a joke, even if she had no clue what being pwned meant.
We would actually like to help you, Mr. O'Sullivan. We think Angus Og will be displeased if he discovers why he is unable to perform, and he may turn his wrath against us as well as you. So if you two are to fight, we would like to ensure that you are the winner. To that end, is there anything we can do to help?
There was no way I was going to let them help. I was sure it would backfire on me, but this was a golden opportunity to fish for information. I'm not sure, I said. Tell me about the Zorias you mentioned. Are they the source of your power?
When did I mention the Zorias?
You swore by them when you threatened Emily.
Ah, well, yes, the Zorias are star goddesses known throughout the Slavic world. The midnight star, Zoria Polushnaya, is a goddess of death and rebirth, and as you might expect, she has quite a bit to do with magic and wisdom. It is she who gives us much of our knowledge and power, though the other two Zorias are helpful as well.
Fascinating, I said, and I was being serious. I hadn't heard much about the Zorias before. Old Slavic deities had rarely come up as a topic of conversation in my travels. I'd need to do some research. You don't do any mucking about with the moon, then?
No.
She shook her head.
It's another kind of craft.
Then I'm at a loss as to how you can help me. What sort of thing did you have in mind?
Well, since you seem to be fairly accomplished at wards...
She gestured around the store to the spells she could sense.
Perhaps we could help you with some offensive capabilities. How are you planning to attack Angus Og?
Did she really think I would answer that? I think I'll just improvise.
Well, we could increase your speed.
Unnecessary, but thank you. Melina frowned.
I get the feeling that you do not really want our help.
You are correct. I'm very grateful for the offer, however. It is kind of you.
Why would you refuse our aid?
Look, I understand you would like to expiate the debt your coven owes me for Emily's treatment, but this is not the sort of service I'm interested in.
You think you are a match for Angus Og?
I shrugged. That remains to be seen. He has not exerted himself overmuch to fight me. Perhaps he thinks I am. Melina looked incredulous.
Are you anything more than a druid?
Of course I am. I own this shop, and I play a mean game of chess, and I've been told that I'm a Fracken Cylon.
What's a Fracken Cylon?
I don't know, but it sounds really scary when you say it with a Polish accent. Her brows drew together and her accent thickened.
You're being flippant with me now, and I do not appreciate it. You have implied that a member of your Tuatha De Danann is afraid of you, and yet you offer no credible reason why this may be true.
It doesn't matter to me whether you believe it or not. Melina's eyes turned icy as she glared at me.
It seems we have some trust issues to work out between us.
You think? Tell me your coven isn't plotting with Angus Oak against me.
My coven isn't plotting against you with Angus Oak.
Now make me believe it.
That appears impossible, but you have a document with Radomiwa's blood on it. I think that indicates that she trusts you, at least. I was under the impression that you and Radomiwa had exchanged favors in the past and were very cordial to each other.
Yes, that's true. That was before members of her coven began sleeping with my mortal enemy.
Well, I do not know how to allay your suspicions,
she said, and pushed her chair back from the table.
So I will take my leave for now.
Thank you for controlling Emily. I really did appreciate that, I said, and I was pleased to have met you.
Good day,
she said, apparently not as pleased to have met me, and tossed her mane of luxurious hair over her red shoulder as she exited, prim and stately and Polish and oh so witchy.
She's kind of like a Mary Poppins just before she turns to the dark side of the Force,
Oberon said. He was still behind the counter, but he had had a good look at her as she exited.
Let go of your anger, Melina. There's still good in you. The Emperor hasn't driven it from you fully.
I clearly need to get you some new videos to watch while I'm at work.
I'd rather come to work with you from now on. It's fun to watch you pretend to be normal.
At that moment, the door opened on its own, and the Morrigan sailed through it, squawking loudly in her battle crow form and scaring the bejesus out of my customers, again. Sigh. When all had exited except for Perry, I told him to take a lunch break.
You're just, gonna take care of that giant freaking bird all by yourself, then?
He asked, never taking his eyes from it.
The one with the razor-sharp beak and the spooky eyes that look like they're lit with the fires of hell?
Yeah, don't worry about it, I said casually. Enjoy yourself. Take your time.
Well, okay, if you're sure. I'll see you later, then.
He circled around to the door cautiously, never taking his eyes off the bird, and then slipped out. I went to the door and locked it behind him, flipping the reversible sign around to say closed. Okay, Morrigan, what's on your mind? She shifted into her human form and remembered this time to clothe herself in black. She was upset, though. Her eyes were still glowing red.
Briette is on her way to see you. She will be here in moments.
I jumped up and down and swore violently in 17 languages.
I feel the same, the Morrigan said. I do not know what she intends. I told her I had taken Bress and the manner of his death, as you suggested, and she merely listened. When I finished speaking, she thanked me and said she would be coming to see you. Then she asked me for privacy, so I know nothing of her true feelings. She has been traveling across the desert this morning on this plane. She is alone.
Great. What if she decides to kill me?
That will test our bargain quite severely,
the Morrigan replied with a smirk. Morrigan?
Relax. We have a bargain. But have the good grace to pretend to be dead if she decides to kill you.
What if she decides to set me on fire and watch me burn?
Then that's going to hurt. Scream all you want, but turn it off at some point and she'll figure you for dead. I'll help you once she's gone.
That makes me feel so much better. Hey, I said, suddenly remembering, were you aware that Flittish came to see me and warned me about Angus Oak as well?
No.
The Morrigan frowned.
When was this?
The same day you came to warn me here. When I went home, she was waiting for me there.
I do not know why she would suddenly be interested in your welfare.
I was thinking the same thing, especially since she got me and my hound into some trouble with the local authorities.
What sort of trouble?
My wolfhound is wanted for murder. He killed a park ranger who surprised us during a hunt, and this ranger was wearing an earring enchanted with fae stealth spells. The Morrigan's eyes flashed even redder.
There are clearly machinations going on in Tir na n'Og of which I am unaware. I dislike being left out. It gives me the feeling that I may be a target.
She huffed and shook her head,
I must investigate. I will linger on this plane a while to see what Briet does, but after that I am going back to Tir na n'og to get some answers.
Her eyes cooled down abruptly, and she turned toward the door.
She comes, the Morrigan said. It would not do for her to see me here. Farewell for now, Sheahan O'Sullivan.
She melted back into a crow and flapped her wings toward the door, which unlocked and opened for her as she flew through, leaving me alone with Oberon, who was enjoying all the comings and goings from his position behind the counter.
You know, Atticus, that turning into a crow business is pretty slick, but that's not her best godlike power by a long shot. She can sense when specific people are approaching in time to avoid them. Wouldn't it be cool if you could automatically avoid assholes for the rest of your life?
Hush, Oberon, I said. Briet is coming. You need to be polite. Keep yourself still back there and don't come out unless I give you express permission. She can fry us to bacon as easily as breathing. I'd no sooner finished speaking than a ball of flame blew through my door, breaking the glass and melting my door chimes. It extinguished itself in front of me, leaving a tall, majestic, fully armored goddess in its place. It was Briet, goddess of poetry, fire, and the forge.
"Old druid," she said in a voice of music and dread, "I must speak with you about the death of my husband."
Chapter 14. Briet was a vision. I don't think there's ever been a hotter widow in history. Even though she was in full armor and all I could see of her actual person were her eyes and her lips, well, I felt like a horny teenager again. I really, really wanted to flirt. But seeing as I was the guy who widowed her, I thought perhaps there was a line somewhere I shouldn't cross. I cleared my throat and licked my lips nervously. "You'd just like to speak about his death?" I asked. "No summary incinerations or anything like that?"
"We will speak first," she said severely. "What comes afterward depends on what you say. Tell me of his death."
I told her everything. One doesn't even attempt to lie to Briet. I sort of left out precisely how I had seen Bress pull his sword on me. I was rather hoping she wouldn't notice my necklace or how much power it held, but I told no untruths.
"The Morrigan told me the same story," she said.
"It was purely self-defense, Briet," I said.
"I realize that."
Her manner softened.
"And in truth, druid, I owe you my thanks. You have relieved me of an odious task."
"Gadzooks! Briet just said she owed me. That was a huge admission, and not what I had expected at all. I beg your pardon? I do not understand." Briet removed her helmet, and her red hair spilled out across her pauldrons like one of those self-inflating life rafts. It wasn't sweaty or tangled from being confined in a helmet across miles of desert. It was glorious, shining, Age of Aquarius hair that would make Melina Sokolowski envious, a full-blown movie star dude that a team of stylists would spend 3 hours teasing before the cameras rolled. It smelled of lavender and holly. I remembered to breathe, only with some effort.
"I will explain," Briet said. "But might you have any tea? It's been a long journey from Tir na n'og."
I leapt to my feet and hurried behind the counter where Oberon waited patiently. "Oh, certainly," I gushed. Making tea for the goddess of fire was so much better than being summarily incinerated by the goddess of fire.
"Can I say hello to her?"
Oberon asked meekly. "Let me check," I told him. "My wolfhound would like to greet you, Briet. Would that be acceptable to you as I brew your tea?"
"You have a hound here. Where is he?"
I dispelled Oberon's camouflage and told him to mind his manners. He trotted into view and padded up to Briet with his tail wagging like a metronome set to something allegro. She had seated herself at one of my tables, and she smiled at his enthusiasm.
"My, you are impressive. Can you speak?"
She was binding her consciousness to his so that she'd be able to hear his answer.
"Yes, Atticus taught me. My name is Oberon. Nice to meet you, Briet."
"And it's nice to meet you, Oberon, Shakespeare's King of the Fae."
She smiled, scratching him behind the ears with a gauntleted hand.
"Who is Atticus?"
"That would be me," I admitted.
"Oh? Nobody told me you are using a new name. They always use your proper name when they speak of you in Tir na n'Og. I suppose you must make interesting choices living amongst the mortals as you do. But you, she said to Oberon, cupping her hand underneath his jaw, I hear you killed a man. Is that true?
I had been measuring loose-leaf tea into sachets as the water boiled, but at this I looked up sharply. Oberon's tail stopped wagging and dropped between his legs. He sat down and whined.
Yes, I didn't mean to. Flitish commanded me and I had to obey.
Yes, I know. I don't blame you, Oberon. In a way, it was my fault. I sent Flitish to see her master.
Gods below! If she kept dropping bombs like that, I'd have to be very careful when handling the boiling water.
Things didn't go the way I planned at all, she added.
She began removing her steel gauntlets to pet him better. They clanked noisily on the table, and the magic in them was palpable. The armor of a forge goddess would be sans-pareil. I wondered what it would take to even scratch it. Like Fragara, maybe.
But now things have gotten to the point where I need to get directly involved.
Can you make the cops forget about me?
Oberon asked hopefully.
I might be able to in normal circumstances. Unfortunately, someone is trying very hard to make sure that they don't forget about you.
Wait, please, don't say anything else, I said. Let me just pour this water and sit down, then we can talk.
Very well. Would you like a belly rub while we wait, Oberon?
Oh, I like you a lot,
Oberon said, and he flopped down happily at her feet, his tail swishing across the floor. Trivia. Briette takes milk and honey in her tea, just like me.
Thank you,
she said before taking a sip and sighing appreciatively. Most welcome, I replied, and sat down and took a moment to savor the surrealism. I was having tea with Briette, a goddess I'd worshipped since childhood, in a city that didn't exist when I was a child. And my wolfhound was joining us. I'd made him a cup and cooled it down with ice, and he was now lapping it up from a dish on the floor. Briette appreciated it, too, for she smiled and said,
This is very strange.
I like strange things, I said. At least the non-threatening kind of strange.
Yes. Unfortunately, there's been plenty of the threatening kind of strange going on lately. You deserve an explanation, I think.
That would be lovely, I allowed.
Here, then, is the short version. My brother, Angus Og, is moving against me. He seeks to supplant me as supreme amongst the Tuatha De Danann, but I suspect that is only a stepping stone to something larger. To that end, whatever it may be, he has been collecting all the enchanted weapons and armor he can. He even got me fool of a husband to ask me to make a set of armor that would stop the blade of Fragara. Not asking him why, I made some ridiculous-looking stuff and told him it would make him invincible. He promptly put it on and got himself killed. So, well done, Druid.
I didn't know what to say.
I would have had to kill him myself if things had gone much farther. As it is, I would still like to avoid direct conflict with Angus Og if I can. Descending to the level of battle is distasteful, especially with one's own brother.
Descending to the level of death is also distasteful, and that's a distinct possibility once one is in a battle. I kept that thought to myself, however, and nodded sympathetically.
Angus wants Fragara because he believes it will penetrate my armor,
she said, tapping her helmet. Won't it?
I don't know for sure,
Briette said.
This armor is an honest attempt to forge something immune to Fragara, unlike what I gave to Bress. I'd rather not test it.
I would never wield Fragara against you. Briette laughed. It was like listening to a symphony that makes you shiver and cry for the joy of it.
I know that, Atticus, and I would rather Angus not wield it against me either.
I'd have to be dead first.
Precisely. I think you are fit to wield it, and I would rather it remain in your possession. But Angus definitely wants it, and he is manipulating events to make sure it falls to him.
You may have noticed some of this already. You mean the firbolgs who attacked me last night? I noticed that, yeah.
I was speaking of other matters. For example, the mortal police pursuing your wolfhound.
But that came about because of Flitish, and you said you sent her.
I sent her to warn you, yes. But that park ranger was the work of my husband, doing Angus's bidding. The police are now tools of the Love God.
They're definitely tools, I agreed.
They'll try to find a way to take the sword from you, even if you resist. Angus hopes you will, because the police will pull their weapons and take the sword from you at the first sign of resistance. You'll have no trouble taking it from them after that.
I see. They'll probably get that search warrant then. I should warn my lawyer.
There's more. Angus has recruited a coven of witches against you.
What? I said. Which coven?
They call themselves the Sisters of the Three Auroras.
I felt the spike in my blood pressure immediately. But they claim to want nothing to do with Angus Og. One of them is betting him, and she asked me to brew a tea to make him impotent.
Angus Og arranged the entire thing with them. It is both a way to give him just cause to kill you, and a way to get the witches close to you.
But I have Radomiwa's blood, I spluttered. My outrage was sloshing over and turning to spittle. Her coven is pledged to do me a favor in return for my services.
They're counting on you not being around much longer to collect, Briett said. If you ask them to do anything that conflicts with Angus Og's interests, this Radomiwa will be conveniently unavailable.
What did the witches get out of the deal? Angus must have promised them something huge.
I do not know for sure. My guess is that he has promised them free traveling privileges through Tir na n'Og.
I gave a low whistle. That would allow them to become a very powerful coven.
Yes. But they are not the only group he's making promises to. He has enlisted the help of the Fomorians. He has stirred up a large number of the Fae against me, and I suspect he has made some bargains with Hel.
That could be a fairly huge problem. There were way more of them than me, and they wouldn't listen to my lawyer. What about the rest of the Tuatha De Danann? Where do they stand?
Most of them are with me. The idea of Fomorians and demons in Tir na n'Og does not make a convincing sales pitch.
What about the Morrigan?
No one knows, because no one has spoken to her.
Briett grinned wryly.
I think Angus was worried she would end his plotting prematurely. For my part, I would rather not be in her debt. She does not work well with others.
She's spoken to me, I said. She is already suspicious that something is going on, and is incensed at being left out.
She will get herself involved as she chooses. Are you willing to get involved, Druid?
I already am involved, it seems.
I'm asking you to choose sides. My side, specifically.
Done, I said instantly. What moral dilemma was there? She wanted me to keep the sword, Angus wanted to take it. She liked me alive, Angus didn't. She was hot. Angus was not.
Methinks.
She smiled so warmly I felt as if my kidneys had melted.
Kill Angus Og for me, and I shall reward you.
I have to admit that some of the warm fuzzies flew away right there. It made me feel like a mercenary.
And should you run into some demons, I have a gift for you. Give me your right hand.
I placed my right hand in her left. Her palm was cool to the touch. Calloused from the forge. Her fingers were long and strong. She placed her right index finger onto the loop of my tattoo and tried to do something. Uh-oh.
I do not understand,
she frowned.
Something is preventing me from giving you the power of cold fire.
I kept my face carefully neutral, while part of me was screaming inside and another part was thinking,
cool!
My amulet had just prevented her from performing magic on me. It might have even protected me from summary incineration had the meeting gone differently. It was not the sort of thing I wanted to test. But now she would become aware of its existence, and things could get awkward.
Your aura is strange, Druid,
she said, sitting back in her chair, noticing it for the first time.
What have you done to it?
I've bound it with cold iron, I said, pulling my necklace out from underneath my shirt. It protects me from most magic. Briett said nothing at first, just sat and stared at my necklace. Then she said,
It is also protecting you from me, Aid. I cannot give you cold fire. If you face any demons, you'll be left to your own devices, and I cannot see how that will avail you if you cannot use magic.
Oh, I can use magic.
Does not the iron prevent it?
I have discovered a solution to the old problem.
Remarkable that you have found one where I have not, said the goddess of the forge. Have you truly tried?
No,
she admitted. I thought it was impossible.
Turns out it's only next to impossible.
Have you tested it against demons?
It prevents succubi from casting their charms on me.
But you have not had to deal with hellfire or any other hellish attacks.
Not yet.
You'll need to test it soon. You need a way to deal with demons. Lots of them, if I'm right about who Angus has been talking to.
What does this cold fire do?
It allows you to burn them from within, but it burns like ice burns. It takes a lot of energy and it drains you. Even if you draw power from the earth, it'll drain you. But it'll save you from being overwhelmed in a fight. Alas, I cannot give it to you.
Sure you can, I said, and I took the necklace off. It changed my aura immediately, and I became nervous. She could hurt me as easily as help me now, if she liked.
That is truly wondrous craft, Siahan,
she said, admiringly, noticing how my aura changed. She'd forgotten my chosen name already and used the one I was born with.
I would have you teach it to me.
I was afraid of this. My apologies, Briet, but I have sworn to keep it a secret. I left out the rest of the sentence, which said, except from the Morrigan, and hurried on before she thought to ask to whom I had sworn. But now that you know such a thing is possible, I have no doubt that you can figure it out on your own. I counsel patience. This craft took me 750 years. She did not appear offended, thankfully. Disappointed, yes. But as she continued to stare at the necklace on the table next to her gauntlets, her expression slowly changed. She looked delighted.
You've given me a new challenge, Druid, and a most worthy one, she said. I will try to fashion my own in a shorter period of time. I know you cannot tell me how it was made without breaking your oath, but will you allow me to inspect it from time to time?
Of course, I said.
Am I right in thinking this necklace will work for no one but you?
Yes. It is bound specifically to me. For anyone else, it would simply be jewelry.
I see now why you have survived so long.
I blushed at her compliment, and she put out her left hand again, smiling. I placed my right hand in hers, and she held it as she touched her finger to the loop of my tattoo. This time, I felt something. A rush of heat and ice through my veins and a spell of dizziness.
Now you have the power of cold fire, Briet said. It works only on Hellspawn, and both you and your targets must be touching the earth. Point at your targets with your right hand, collect your will, and say doi, and they'll be destroyed. Though I warn you again, it takes a tremendous amount of your energy, so use it sparingly. And remember, it'll also take a few moments for them to die.
Thank you, Briet.
Don't thank me yet,
she said, giving Oberon a last scratch before donning her gauntlets again.
Despite the advantages you have, you are all that is keeping Angus Og and his allies from moving openly against me. They are legion, and you are one man, and I am glad you are so willing to stand in front of them, but I half expect you to be dead by the dawn.
On that cheery note, she leaned across the table and kissed me. She tasted of milk and honey and berries, and it was simply blissful.
You've been kissed by 3 goddesses in as many days,
Oberon said once Briet had left.
So I think you owe me 300 French poodles. That should make us about even.
Chapter 15. I thought Sundays were supposed to be relaxing. As a male citizen of America, I'm entitled on Sundays to watch athletic men in tight uniforms ritualistically invade one another's territory. And while they're resting, I get to be bombarded with commercials about trucks, pizza, beer, and financial services. That's how it's supposed to be. That's the American dream. I suppose I cannot complain, because I'm not really a citizen of America. Mr. Samurgian called the INS on me once, in fact. I waved my hand in front of the agents' faces and said, I'm not the druid you're looking for. They were not amused. I waved my hand again and said, move along. And they got out their handcuffs. That's when I got out my slightly scuffed yet Saulnier illegal documents, prepared for me by Leif Helgerson, blood-sucking attorney at law. And after the INS agents went away, that's when I sent Oberon over to poop on Mr. Samurgian's lawn for the first time. We have not been on good terms since then. We never were, of course, but at least for the first few years he cheerfully ignored me. When he began to harass me, I suspected him of being either abysmally stupid or a pawn of the Fae. Turned out he was just mean, and dog shit on his lawn turned him into Flibbertigibbet, a regular Lebanese Tom O'Bedlam. Now, I suspected I was a pawn of the Fae. I didn't know whose pawn I was, precisely. I felt somewhat like Korea, with the United States and China fighting a proxy war through me. I didn't want to be a pawn. Poor Korea. It would be better to be a knight. Or Denmark. The Danes used to kick everyone's ass, until their victims figured out where they came from. And that was precisely my problem. People knew where to find me. Especially, it seemed, on this particular Sunday. I was calling a contractor to do an emergency replacement of my melted shop door when I saw, through the window, a familiar Crown Victoria pull up. Detective Carlos Jimenez climbed out, and shortly afterward a couple more cars screeched into parking spaces and cops with sunglasses lumbered out of them to adjust their waistbands and check that their shirts were still tucked in. Detective Darren Fagles, the one who fancied himself a reservoir dog, had an official-looking piece of paper flapping in his hand, the legal-size sort with lots of fine print. I hung up the phone as the contractor was in mid-sentence and told Oberon to leap up on top of the far table by the wall. Curl yourself on top and don't move a muscle. Not an ear twitch, not a tail wag, nothing until these guys leave.
What guys?
He said as he moved to obey. Those cops are coming. If any of them manages to see you somehow, I want you to run out of here and go straight to the widow's backyard and hide there, okay? Don't wait for me to tell you.
You think they can see through the camouflage?
They might be able to. They've certainly had help getting this far. Oberon jumped gingerly onto the table, dwarfing it but just able to coil himself on its top. As soon as he settled down, all hints of his presence disappeared. I shot a quick glance at Fragara, still resting on the shelf underneath my counter, and cast camouflage on it for insurance. As the cops grouped together and began to walk toward the door, I wondered if they had decided to come here first or if they had visited my house. If they had visited my house first, where the hell were my lawyers? A horn honked loudly, demanding attention, as a metallic blue BMW Z4 growled to a halt behind Fagles. Hal Hauk sprang out the door as if summoned.
"Pardon me, are you Detective Fagles?"
Hal said, placing himself in the detective's way, perhaps a bit faster than a normal human could. The other officers registered this and tensed. A couple of hands drifted toward holsters.
"Stand aside, sir. I'm on official police business," Fagles commanded.
Hal wasn't intimidated in the least.
"If your business is with Third Eye Books or its owner, then your business is with me," he said. "I'm the attorney of record for Mr. Atticus O'Sullivan."
"You're the attorney of record? Then who was the other guy at his house?"
"One of my associates. He called me and reported that your search of his house was not entirely legal, and I assure you that we'll be making a complaint, perhaps filing suit."
That got the cops' attention. They glowered at Hal, and Fagles sneered.
"We have a warrant signed by a Tempe judge."
He held it in front of Hal's face to emphasize his point. "Our search was entirely legal."
"But that warrant gives you permission to search for an Irish wolfhound or similar dog, I believe, and nothing more. Is that correct, detective?"
Fagles didn't want to answer with a flat-out yes, so he tried to sound defiant as he replied,
"That's what the warrant says."
"An Irish wolfhound is a very large breed of dog. I saw the specific dog you're looking for before he ran away, and I assure you he weighs almost as much as you. That being given, we can assume that the dog could not possibly be hiding in a drawer or a dresser or in kitchen cupboards or underneath a basil plant. Yet you and your colleagues searched through all those things at my client's house in clear violation of his civil rights."
I didn't need to hear any more than that to know they weren't looking for just my dog. Angus Ogue had sent these guys to find Fragara, and they had torn up my basil in the kitchen. At least, I hope that was all. If they got my whole backyard herb garden, which I had left camouflaged, Oberon would have to make a run for it soon.
"We did no such thing," Fagles said.
"My associate will testify that you did."
"His word against ours."
"He took some video of your search procedure with his cell phone."
Fagles bit back his initial retort and ground his teeth for a moment. Then he said,
Look, whoever you are,
Hal Hauk,
whatever, we have a legal warrant to search these premises. You will stand aside now or we'll arrest you.
I will stand aside, Detective, but I warn you not to repeat the methods you used at my client's house. You're looking for a large dog, nothing more, and I'll be recording your search. If you look in places where a large dog cannot possibly be hiding, then the lawsuit we bring against you will be much, much worse.
Fine.
Fine, Al said. I'll take that. And he snatched the warrant out of Fagel's hand, faster than the eye could track, before stepping aside. Fagel's was pissed. He had probably wanted to slap the warrant against Hal's chest or something like that, a not too subtle push or jab to establish his superiority. But Hal had not only robbed him of that, he had made Fagel's look slow and stupid, which, compared to Hal, he was. In Fagel's defense, he didn't know he was trying to play dominance games with a werewolf. Rather than say anything to deepen his humiliation, Fagel stalked forward, with Jimenez and the others close behind. He paused at the door, examining the broken glass around the edges and scattered on the floor inside. He peered through at me before stepping across the threshold. I was standing to his left, behind my counter, access to which was open and visible from the shop entrance.
"What happened here, O'Sullivan?"
he said. "A customer objected strenuously to my returns policy," I said.
"Yeah, right," Fagel's muttered as he stepped through the door.
As soon as he did, wards around my shop alerted me that he had a binding on him. I looked closely at his aura as he gestured for the others to file in and start searching, and I turned on my fairy specs. A band of green knotwork wreathed Fagel's skull, almost like one of those Roman laurels. That was the primary method by which he was being controlled. But interlaced with those strands, I saw, were very fine blue and red threads. I could not break the green binding without breaking those too, and I didn't know what those were for, though I assumed they weren't friendly by their design. Failsafes, perhaps, or magical booby traps, or merely something for me to waste my time on. The other officers, I noted quickly, had nothing about them beyond their normal human auras, all tinged with aggression and stress, but that was only to be expected after being schooled by a lawyer. Hal followed Jimenez and the other cops as they spread out through the store, which meant I could safely focus all my attention on Fagel's. He remained by the door, transfixed by something he saw on my counter shelves.
"What's that?"
Fagel said, jerking his chin vaguely in my direction.
"What's what?" "That," he said, removing his sunglasses and pointing. "That looks like a scabbard. You have a sword behind your counter?"
He folded his sunglasses and slipped them into his shirt pocket before looking at me expectantly.
"Nope." "Don't lie to me, I can see it."
Right. That told me quite a bit. If he could see the sword and not Oberon, who truly was sitting in plain sight on a table across the room, then Angus had given him a very selective ability. It wasn't the ability to see through camouflage, which would have instantly revealed to him the purported target of his search. Rather, it was the specific ability to see Fragora, which was supposed to be magically cloaked. That cloak had worked very well on Bress, so it should work equally well on Fagel's, except that he seemed attuned to it. How does one get attuned to a cloaked item? You need to have a lot of help from the person who cast the cloak in the first place. That meant Radomiwa, leader of the Sisters of the Three Auroras. Fagel's was walking, talking evidence they were working against me with Angus Og.
"Is it a dog, Detective?" Hal asked, swinging around from surveying Jimenez's progress to confront Fagel's.
He stopped a couple of paces away from the detective, far enough into the shop that he wouldn't see what Fagel's was looking at.
"Because if it's not, then it's none of your business."
The detective ignored him and said to me,
"That's a deadly weapon you're hiding, and you need a permit for that. Do you have a concealed weapons permit?"
"Don't answer," Hal told me, and pointed his cell phone at Fagel's. "I'm recording this, detective. According to Arizona Revised Statute 13-3102, subsection G, a permit is not necessary for weapons carried in a belt holster that is wholly or partially visible, or carried in a scabbard or case designed for carrying weapons that is wholly or partially visible."
Whoa. That's why Hal gets $3.50 an hour.
quoting Arizona statutes, complete with their soul-destroying legalistic sentence structure? That's druidic. That is not a concealed weapon, Hal continued, nor is it a dog, which is all you are authorized to search for. I tuned the two of them out as they continued to wrangle over whether the scabbard was concealed or not on my shelf, and turned my attention to the bindings floating about Fagel's impeccably coiffed dome. My hunch was that the blue knots represented the binding that allowed him to see the cloak, which was in turn allowing him to penetrate the camouflage. So if I unraveled that particular binding, the problem of my sword would quite literally disappear. The trouble was that breaking the blue knots would snap the red ones too, and while I could appreciate the craft that went into these particular bindings, I still had no way of telling precisely what Angus had wrought there. Perhaps the Morrigan or Briett could tell me precisely what spells the knots represented and how to deal with them safely, but the best I could figure was that the red knots were bad juju. If I took time to deal with it, it might go off in response to my tampering anyway, and I would still need to deal with the blue knot afterward, because I could tell Fagles wouldn't give up until he tried taking the sword from me. Angus wouldn't have it any other way. And the green knot? That would be a direct magical battle with Angus Og for control of Fagles, during the course of which he would learn quite a bit about my abilities, and I didn't want to tip my hand quite that much yet. Here, then, would be a true test of my wards and bindings. I decided to activate all the magic dampening I could from my shop's wards, then go after the blue knots and let the red knots do whatever they were designed to do. Damn the consequences. It was one of those decisions you make when you have too much testosterone bubbling around in your system, or when you've been raised in a culture of ridiculous machismo, as I was. The blue knot was absurdly fragile. It snapped almost immediately with the gentlest of mental tugs, and the red one snapped along with it. Definitely a trap, the concussive sort. I felt a whoomp against my face, like getting hit unexpectedly full force with a pillow, and I saw Hal's head snap back abruptly. He fell over backwards, snarling in surprise. Fagles yelped and grabbed at his head, and then as Hal and I were recovering, Hal red-faced and eyes a bit yellow, his wolf close to the surface, Fagles went completely batshit and drew his gun on me. "Hands up!" he yelled. And of course that brought all the other cops running over, Jimenez in the lead, drawing his gun out too. I raised my hands and wondered what would have happened if I hadn't activated the shop's wards first. Hal might have had his head taken off. He had taken a good shot as it was, and I got only a fraction of the power thanks to the stronger protection of my necklace. Fagles was reacting to some magical feedback, nothing more, and it looked like none of the other cops farther away had felt a thing. They were just backing Fagles' play.
"What happened?"
Oberon asked.
"It's okay. Don't move," I told him.
Whoa, detective, that's not necessary. You're pointing a gun at an unarmed man who's cooperating with a legal search," Hal said, panting a bit.
"Bullshit! He assaulted me!"
Fagles spat.
"What?
That's nonsense, man. He's been standing there passively more than 5 feet away from you the entire time."
"He just hit me upside the head."
"Well, I'm sure he deserved it, Atticus."
"Hush, I didn't hit him." "He most certainly did not, and that security camera right there will prove it," Hal exclaimed, pointing at the camera. All eyes followed his finger and saw that it would most definitely prove whether or not I had moved to slap Detective Fagles upside the head. Fagles heard the certainty in Hal's voice, saw the doubt in his colleagues' faces, and practically stomped his foot as he cried,
"Well, something hit my head, and it sure as hell wasn't me!"
"Something hit me too, Detective, but it wasn't my client, and there's no reason to keep pointing your gun at him. Let's all calm down now."
"I want to know what hit me!"
Fagles insisted.
"And hey, where'd the sword go? It's gone!"
It wasn't gone. But he couldn't see it now that I had snapped that blue knot. The camouflage was in effect. "What sword?" I said, playing dumb.
"The sword that we were just talking about!" Fagles
screamed.
"The one that was on that shelf!"
He pointed impotently at the spot where my sword still lay, hidden from his unaided vision.
"Now that's funny," Oberon said. "I think his panties are getting twisted. If I had any sausages to spare, I would give you one for that right there." "You saw it too?"
Fagles accused Hal, looking around at the other cops who were eyeing him a bit uncertainly.
How could I have seen it, Detective? I'm on this side of the counter.
Hal pointed out, the very picture of reason and affability.
But you argued about it with me!
That's because I'm paid to argue about things. But I never saw this sword you're referring to. I merely objected to you taking anything not included in the warrant. Speaking of which, has anyone found the large dog yet?
Detective Jimenez sighed and put away his gun, and all the other cops relaxed too, save for Fagles. They were beginning to look a bit embarrassed.
I still don't know what hit me, and I want an answer!
Fagles ground out, his chin lifted obstinately.
I think it was a freak gust of wind, Detective,
Hal said, coming through the broken door. I felt it too. That did it for Detective Jimenez.
The dog isn't here, Fagles,
he said.
Let's go. Put the gun away.
Fagles gritted his teeth in frustration, and the green wreath around his head flared menacingly. And that's when he shot me. Chapter 16. You know that old saw about your life flashing before your eyes at the moment of death? Well, if you've lived more than 2,000 years, it's going to take a while for your subconscious to put together a decent retrospective. And I imagine that there must be one of those spinning beach balls of death hovering over my head, like when I asked my computer to do too many things at once. But that's not the first thing I thought about as I fell to the ground with a hole in my chest. It was the second. The first thing I thought was,
oh no, I've been shot!
In the immortal words of the Golden Protocol droid when he got lased with special effects in a mining colony. As I waited for my life's highlight reel, much like those tributes they play at the Oscars every year, to play in my mind, quite a few people became excited in my shop. All the cops, led by Jimenez, pulled their guns back out and pointed them at Fagles, shouting at him to put his gun down now. And Oberon wanted to start tearing into him right away.
Atticus!
It's okay, buddy. Stay there. I'll be fine. Poor Fagles. Even as I watched from flat on my back, the green binding about his head dissolved. He came back to full conscious control of his mind to find himself standing over me with a smoking gun hanging from his hand and five cops pointing their guns at him. His voice, thin and trembling, said,
It wasn't me. Drop the gun, Fagles,
Jimenez commanded. Fagles didn't seem to hear.
There was someone in my mind, telling me what to do. He wanted the sword.
There is no sword, Hal spoke up. Only my unarmed client bleeding on the floor.
That drew my attention back to my condition and how very, very much it hurt. Thanks a lot, Hal. I was bleeding out pretty good, and I had a punctured left lung that was filling up with blood as well. I reached for some power to begin healing and didn't have any to tap. I'd used everything I had stored in my bear charm on casting camouflage and dealing with Angus Ogg's bindings. I needed to get outside where I could touch the earth, but Fagles was still standing there, and the cops were still telling him to drop the gun, and no one was dialing 911 while they had an unarmed rogue cop to deal with.
Owie. But I didn't shoot him. It wasn't me,
Fagles pleaded.
You don't understand. There's a security camera and six witnesses who watched you pull the trigger on an unarmed, unresisting man,
Jimenez said.
You know what that means. Drop the weapon now, Fagles.
Tears began leaking from Fagles' eyes and his chin quivered.
I don't understand how this happened,
he said.
I would never do something like this.
We all saw you do it,
Jimenez said.
Last warning. Drop the weapon or we'll be forced to shoot you.
The direct threat jarred Fagles out of his self-pity.
Oh, you're going to shoot me, are you?
He sneered, and then he became unhinged.
Well, that's better than going to prison, and even better than that would be taking you with me. Fagles, don't!
And then there was a lot of noise. Fagles' inchoate roar of rage against what he knew to be injustice, his brief attempt to raise his weapon, and then the percussive explosions of five guns going off, sending Fagles howling backward through the door, and finally the curses of the cops who knew they'd all be sitting on their asses for days pending investigation.
Somebody get the paramedics here and some black and whites to block off the street,
Jimenez said,
and we're going to need that security tape.
Hal rushed forward and knelt down to see how I was doing.
I need to get outside to draw some power,
I whispered at him.
lung filling up with blood.
And then I cough some up for him by way of punctuation.
How's he doing?
Jimenez asked, looking over Hal's shoulder.
Help me move him. He needs air,
Hal said, and the detective backed off.
Whoa, we need to wait for the paramedics. We're not supposed to do anything.
Fine, I'll do it myself,
Hal said, and he hooked an arm under my shoulders and knees and scooped me up as effortlessly as he would an Italian runway model. Silly cop, I don't need your help. I have a werewolf on retainer.
Hey, if he dies, it's going to be your fault.
If he dies, he can sue me, Hal said. Get out of the way!
He sidestepped through the broken door, over the body of Detective Fagles, and then placed me down on the grass strip outside my shop. I gasped in relief as I immediately began to draw power from the earth. Between bloody coughs, I spoke quietly so that only Hal would be able to hear me as I began closing my wounds.
I need the sword. It's invisible, but you can feel it on the shelf. Bring it to me. And get someone over here to clean up all of my blood. Completely sanitize the place, every drop, including your clothes.
Hal looked down and saw my blood all over him.
This is a $3,000 suit. I'm good for it. Gotta get the door fixed, too. And Oberon will need looking after.
I thought I smelled him, Hal said.
I nodded.
He's in the shop, camouflaged like the sword. I'll tell him to jump in your beamer.
Okay, I'll go open the door and leave it open. But tell him to be careful on the leather seats.
Sybarite, I said.
Ascetic,
he retorted, and he got up to go open his car door. I heard sirens wailing in an urban imitation of the Banshee, and as I poured everything I could into accelerating my healing, I reached out to Oberon.
Okay, Oberon, I'm healing up fine, but they're going to come take me to the hospital for a while, and I need you to go with Hal for now. I should be back tomorrow.
Why do you need to go at all?
There's some fluid in my lungs, and I can't get that out without some help. Hal has opened the door of his car for you. Try to get out of the store as quietly as you can, and watch out for blood on the ground, because your paw prints will give you away. There's a dead body right outside the door, so be careful.
There are a lot of people milling around by the door.
There's going to be more of them soon. The longer you wait, the more there'll be. I'm outside on the ground to the right.
Wait. What's wrong? Is that tiny little toy car Hal's?
It's a very expensive toy. You're supposed to be careful with the leather seats.
So, I'm supposed to ninja past these cops, tread across the broken glass. You remember the broken glass, right? Avoid the buckets of blood outside the door, and jump silently into that puny car without saying hello to the upholstery?
An excellent summation. Make it quick.
Not so fast. Promise you'll get me a date with the French poodle.
Seriously? You're holding out on me right now? I've been shot and I'm coughing up blood and you're negotiating for some tail?
Oh, all right. But I totally deserve one and you know it. I've been a good widow doggy.
It was at this moment that Perry, who had slunk out of the shop more than an hour ago under the glowing red eyes of the Morrigan, chose to return from lunch.
Holy shit, boss, he said. Did that big fucking bird do all of this?
Chapter 17. I beckoned Perry over.
I'll explain what happened later,
I said as he squatted next to me in the grass.
The bird was just the beginning, but listen.
I paused to cough up some more blood.
Damn, Atticus. I knew that bird was bad news. I'm sorry, man. I should have stayed to help you out.
Don't worry about it. You can help me now. You're on the clock until you get a glass contractor out here to fix up the door. Once that's done, lock up and head home. Open up tomorrow for me and make a cup of humility. There's some sachets already made. You know the one I'm talking about. The one that sorority girls ask for when they want to end a relationship.
Perry nodded and grinned wryly.
Good. Make it for a customer named Emily. Don't tell her anything about what you saw here or where I'm at or anything. Is that clear? If she asks you what the weather's like outside, you shrug your shoulders and say you don't know, all right?
Got it, boss.
That goes for everybody who asks anything. Tell them I'll be back in a few days. If you don't know how to make a certain kind of tea for someone, then don't even try. Just apologize and tell them I'll be back soon.
Is that true? I tried to laugh, but coughed instead.
What? That I'll be back?
I certainly hope so.
You're not going to be in the hospital for weeks, because that looks like a bullet hole in your shirt.
As the Black Knight famously said, that's just a flesh wound. The Black Knight always triumphs,
Perry beamed. Monty Python is like catnip for nerds. Once you get them started quoting it, they're constitutionally incapable of feeling depressed.
That's right. It would greatly ease my mind if you took care of things, Perry. And if a guy named Hal tells you to do anything, you do it as if it came from my mouth, okay? He's my attorney. Speaking of whom, here he is.
Hal returned from the inside of the store, and he had Fragorak clutched invisibly in his left hand. He knelt down on the other side of me, seeming to use his left hand for support, but in truth laying the sword down in the grass against my side. As he did this, he held out his right hand to Perry to distract him.
"Pleased to meet you. I'm Hal Hulk," he said.
"Barry Thomas," he said, taking Hal's hand and shaking it. "I work for Atticus."
"Excellent.